Welcome to another conversation with our health unit, the Southeast Health Unit. And joining us now is Dr. Lena Lee, the Deputy Medical Officer of Health. Dr. Lee, welcome back.
Hello.
I have to get used to calling you Deputy Medical Officer of Health.
It's great. We're all getting used to new roles, new organization. I was saying earlier, new year, new me. It's an exciting time for sure.
And of joining us as well, Dana Douglas, a registered dietitian and public health nutritionist. Good to see you again, Dana.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. Well, you mentioned it, Dr. Lee. The new year is here. And often with this comes messaging around resolutions focused on making changes to our health. Dr. Lee, can you tell us the health unit's perspective?
Yeah, so the beginning of a new year gives us a chance to think about what we hope and expect for the new year, and New Year's resolutions are often parts of this. In general, resolutions that are more about an approach rather than avoiding certain behaviors are more effective. I'll give you an example. So I'll be paying more attention to my mental health is an approach, or I'll eat more vegetables, also an approach, whereas I won't eat potato chips anymore. That would be an example of avoiding certain behaviors. And so thinking about an approach type resolution gives you a little bit more grace if you slip up, more flexibility on how you might meet the resolution, and holds yourself to the resolution a little bit longer. So for example, back to the chip example, if you say, I'm not going to eat chips anymore, and then you eat some chips, then you've broken your New Year's resolution, and you may be tempted to think, well, I've broken it already, so I'll just, never mind that resolution. I'll eat the chips and forget about it. But taking an approach that's more about, for example, I'm going to eat more vegetables, it's not all or nothing. And you give yourself more grace to slip up. You have more flexibility on, for example, what type of vegetables, how you might choose to eat them. And it's a way to sort of encourage healthier behaviors that might replace some less healthy behaviors. Having a all or nothing approach for some people may work. And so, if that works for you, then as the kids say these days, live your best life. Do the kids still say that? Maybe not. Anyway, so go for it if that's something that works for you. But what the evidence says is that some people do have success with avoidance and all or nothing approaches, but more people will find success with a more general approach cell resolution. So that's the reason I'm talking about it in that way. Another thing to think about is that New Year's resolutions are oftentimes a way to make progress on lifelong behavior change. So it's not something that you're doing just for a year. The resolution is a way to sort of think about, focus on something specific over the course of a year to get to a change or an activity. And it really means that you don't have to be fully successful from the get-go and give yourself permission to be better and better at something rather than being perfect right from the start, right? Like at the beginning of January, I need to be perfect. No, over the course of the year, give yourself grace, give yourself time and flexibility to become the more towards the thing that you're looking to do, or a behavior or an action that you're looking to have. So oftentimes we know from literature and from surveys that exercising more and eating more healthily are the two most common New Year's resolutions. So we're going to talk about those today.
All right, well, thank you, Dana. In particular, what about changing eating habits as a New Year's resolution?
So there are times when changing our eating habits can be helpful and it can improve our health. So, for example, increasing our vegetable intake or drinking more water, these are both changes that are good for our health. However, in our society, it's often normalized to talk and think of food in a way that can lead people to have a negative relationship with it and with their bodies. So it's common for weight and food to be linked together, specifically when we think about dieting as a way to change our bodies. And this is problematic because it can lead to eating disorders and disordered eating, among other negative outcomes.
So, what are some red flags to keep in mind when we're thinking about our eating habits and what can be done to fight that?
So some examples of red flags could be things like leaving out an entire food group, like vegetable, fruit, grain, or protein foods, ignoring your hunger cues, like happens with intermittent fasting or calorie restriction, villainizing certain foods, labeling foods as good or bad, healthy or unhealthy, junk food, etc. and feeling guilt around eating certain foods. So these are all signs that something might be leading us down the wrong path. As far as what we can do to address these red flags, it's an important and helpful first step to be mindful of their existence. It's also helpful to consider the language that we use around food and strive for neutrality. So this means calling foods by their actual name. So for example, calling a cookie instead of calling it junk food or a treat. It's helpful to check your self-talk related to your own body image and relationship with food and avoid judging yourself based on what you eat. This can be challenging to get used to, but the more often that we're able to reflect on this and practice it, the easier it becomes. It's also helpful to be aware of the mindset of those around you and surround yourself with those who will support you through the process. So this could be setting boundaries with individuals who might be more triggering. For example, certain topics might be off limits or maybe delay seeing them until you're in a better place.
So with the new year comes resolutions, and we're often wanting to get more exercise, and that often is related to how our bodies look as well. So Dr. Lee, maybe you can talk a little bit about this if you don't mind. And Dana, thank you very much for what you just said. Sorry, I didn't mean to gloss over that very important information. But Dr. Lee, if you could please talk to us now a little bit about that exercise component.
Yeah, so I want to start off by saying that most people don't get enough physical activity in general, and that's well supported in literature about North America and Canada in particular, and is including Ontario. There are surveys of behavior for people in Ontario, and this extra extends sort of across the lifespan, so kids, adults, older adults, etc. Right? What we want to avoid is linking physical activity with changing the way that our bodies look. So research shows that actually this can demotivate people and create a negative relationship with being active. Again, it's one of those things where, you know, different people may have different reactions, right? So you may be listening and thinking, well, actually, I feel that that motivates me. So, but as a general rule, based on what the literature shows, more people find that it can challenge and make complicated the relationship between physical activity and their bodies. So what we recommend instead is to be active for reasons aside from how we look. So our mental health, great body of evidence on the importance of physical activity on improving mental health. It also helps with stress management, blood sugar control, heart and bone health, and bone health in particular, very strongly linked with strength training or weight training. Building and maintaining strength and flexibility and mobility, and especially for older adults, mobility and independence as we age. So those are all really important benefits of physical activity. And I'll also note that the recommendations for exercise for adults is 2.5 hours of moderate to vigorous physical activity each week. And evidence shows that doing this in short chunks, even 10 minutes at a time, is effective in improving health. And by moderate to vigorous physical activity, the rule of thumb is moderate activity is you can't sing anymore. Like as you're doing the physical activity, you can't really sing. And then vigorous physical activity is as you're doing the physical activity, you can still talk. You always want to be able to talk at all times, but you can't complete a full sentence. So those are rules of thumb of what we're talking about for moderate and vigorous physical activity.
So let's talk a little bit about strategy for setting goals then for things such as New Year's resolutions, Dr. Lee.
Yeah, so a few things to mention. One is breaking down your resolution into specific components and really thinking through how you would incorporate it into your day. So rather than sort of a nebulous, undefined, well, I'm going to try to do better at X, Y, or Z resolution, really like sitting down and thinking like, what does that actually mean for me? For example, scheduling certain days of the week for activities that you want to improve or enhance in your life, or figuring out what else in your life might need to be adjusted as you make the changes, right? So like you might be going for the resolution about eating more veggies, since we've been talking about that one. Well, like it means that what you buy at the grocery store might need to change, right? It might mean that the time you allot for cooking might change, or cleaning up the dishes, or whatever the case may be, right? So like being thoughtful about that. One challenge with resolutions is that a year is a long time, and so it can lend itself to procrastination, right? So create chunks of time within the year that are milestones. So every season, every month, or whatever the case may be, and then you can have have the resolutions feel less overwhelming and also have concrete goals for those chunks of time to see progress. And then having those milestones is also an opportunity to reevaluate the goals and think of new strategies, just sort of regroup and think like, is this working? Is this not working? What else should I adjust? The golden rule for setting goals, people have heard of SMART goals, right? So specific, realistic. I won't go through the acronym now, but using a lot of those really specific elements are going to be helpful. Set a specified time and keep yourself accountable to that. You can, you know, do longer or shorter time horizons for those goals. You can even do like, you know, over the course of this week, you can incorporate like those thoughtfulness that I talked about in the beginning about how you're going to change your day to day to incorporate these goals. That can be part of the goals that you create. All of these things can be things to consider. Also think about making it fun. So using a resolution to learn a new skill, to socialize, even the satisfaction of being able to cross something off your list. Those are things that can give a little bit of encouragement as well, and making it social. So research shows that talking to others about your goals, making joint goals, having somebody else to bounce ideas off of and problem solve, those all help to make behavioral change stick. And then the last I've mentioned before is giving yourself grace. So goals are inherently about wanting to be better or making positive changes. Sometimes it's just not a good moment in your life for whatever reason, right? You've had a bad week, you've put a resolution on the back burner for a month or whatever the case may be. When the time is right again, pick it back up and make new plans. That's totally okay, right? Like, you're accountable to you, but be generous to yourself as well. The future is new, and, you know, give yourself grace to revise your goals, your timelines. That's important.
All right. So, Dana, where can people go for credible information?
So for nutrition information, check out Dietitians of Canada and unlockfood.ca. They're both helpful tools that cover an abundance of different topics related to food. Participaction.com is a great resource for physical activity related information. And I'll also mention Science Up First. So it's a great tool for debunking misinformation.
Fantastic. So, Dr. Lee, if we want to get some more localized information, where can we go? I think I know where you're going to direct us.
Yeah, so as always, healthynet.org. We have lots of information. Just as a caveat, I'll say this for the next little while, an asterisk around healthynet.org. As we continue the merger journey, our website will likely change, so we'll always keep you up to date on that. You'll see on the healthynet.org, it's still the LGL branding, and you'll see a pop-up that says, you know, Southeast Health Unit, we're not changing the branding yet. All that is coming in the coming months, so keep an eye out for that, but don't be surprised when you see all that on our website.
The Deputy Medical Officer of Health with the Southeast Health Unit, Dr. Lena Lee, and Dana Douglas, Registered Dietitian and Public Health Nutritionist. Thank you both so very much for today.
Always good to be here.
Thank you.